What is up, you cunning cooks? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. We are back this week with another installment of our So You're Going to See Shakespeare series. The idea of this episode is that you'll listen to us in transit to a Shakespearean production so that we can prepare you to be the best little audience member that you can be.
An audio version of the dramaturgical notes, if you will.
So, hopefully, you'll enjoy this episode as you head out to see Romeo and Juliet.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. You should check it out.
Cool. Here we go.
The first thing we need to cover before we get into this episode is a quick synopsis of the play, so you at least know the story. Dan.
Yes.
Why don't you lead us off?
All right. This show begins with a prologue, which basically tells us the entire action of the play in 14 lines.
So you can go home.
That's it. So it's two households, they're both going to fight, then the kids are going to die, and then there's going to be resolution, and that's the prologue.
There you go. So then we see two servants from one of the feuding houses, the Capulets, and two servants from the other feuding house, the Montagues, and they both bite their thumbs at each other, and they talk a lot of game, and then they get in a fight. And the prince comes running out and says, "So help me God, if there is one more fight in this town, you're all gonna die." And everyone's like, "All right, we'll be good." And then Romeo comes over, Romeo of the House Montague. He is super sad because the love of his life, Rosaline, isn't into him, and he'll never fall in love with anyone else again. And Benvolio's like, "Hey, you'll find someone else. It'll be great." And Romeo says, "No, I'll never fall in love again."
So then we see Capulet and Paris, Lord Capulet and County Paris. He's basically lining up, Capulet's lining up Paris to marry his daughter. So he's like, "I know how we'll do this. Let's have a big ass party and invite everyone we know. Unless they're Montagues, they can go pound sand." Mm-hmm. So then he sends off a servant with a letter. So don't you know, he comes upon Benvolio and Romeo and is like, "Can you please read this note?" And they're like, "Yeah, there's a big party tonight and everyone's going to be there. Mercutio. Oh, and Rosaline." And then Romeo's like, we should go.
So then we meet Juliet as she's in her room with her nurse getting ready for the party. And Juliet's like, "Am I ready to get married?" And the nurse is like, "Well, just a grown Paris is going to be at the party tonight. Check him out and see if he's your love." And hint, he's going to be, because that's your only choice.
So then we get Romeo and Mercutio and Benvolio who are headed towards the party. And Romeo's like, "I don't want to go." And Mercutio, who we finally meet, have to drag Romeo in. And he's like, "Fine, I'll go. But I'm telling you, I have a bad feeling about this."
So they sneak in there. They're kind of chill. And they're like, "Oh, my God. We totally snuck into this party." And Tybalt, who is one of the House Capulet and is the brawlinest fella in town, overhears them talking, and he knows it's them, and he goes to Lord Capulet and he says, "Those Montagues are here. You want me to kill them, I think, or beat them up?" And Lord Montague's like,
Lord Capulet
is like, no blood tonight. It's just a party. As long as they're cool, it's fine. Tybalt says, "I got a bad feeling about that," which is well placed because immediately after, Romeo and Juliet cross paths and start making out and fall in love with each other.
So that brings us into Act Two. There's a quick little scene where Benvolio and Mercutio make a whole lot of dick jokes, and then Romeo comes out after they leave, and basically then there's the balcony scene, mm-hmm. which if you want to know more about, you can check out a recent episode of No Holds Barred, where we go into depth at the balcony scene.
Or pretty much any essay ever written on Shakespeare. Then,
enter the friar.
The friar, right.
Enter the ghostly friar. So then they have the big love scene, they're like, "I'll see you tomorrow." And then Romeo's like, "I'm going to run off and see the friar and tell him all about this. What could possibly go wrong?" So we meet the friar he's like, "What's up?" And the friar's like, "Hey, you look like in good mood. Were you with Rosaline?" And he's like, "No, who's that?" And the friar's like, "Oh boy, here we go again." So then we go back to the next morning, Benvolio and Mercutio, who still haven't found Romeo.
Right. They're still looking for him. They're also talking about how good Tybalt is at murder, which is a real strength of his.
Foreshadowing.
Then the nurse comes through looking for Romeo because Juliet sent him out to find him. Mercutio kind of sexually harasses her a little bit.
Yep.
Romeo shows up and tells Juliet about the friar's plan that they should get married, and Juliet should just figure out a way that Romeo can get up to see her that night, and the nurse is pumped and she heads back to tell her.
Right. She tells the nurse the plan. He tells the nurse that
plan. Right, yes.
So then Juliet, we smash back to Juliet, who's like pacing around her room, freaking out because the nurse is gone and she wants to know what's going on. And there's a great comedic scene where the nurse comes in and is like, you know what? Do your messages yourself. But by the way, you're getting married tomorrow.
And it's the great, Yeah. So then in the next scene, Romeo and Friar Lawrence wait for Juliet to show up. And then Juliet shows up. And then in Act 2, Scene 6, they get married.
And then we get the scene where Benvolio and Mercutio, they're out in the streets. It's hot. Capulets are abroad. And they're like, you know what? I think we're going to fight somebody. And they're like, nah, let's not do that. And then Tybalt walks in. They're like, yeah, let's do that. So then Tybalt's like, where's Romeo? And they're like, we don't have him here, but do you want to fight me? And Mercutio's like, he's like, nah, I'm not interested. Then Romeo comes in, and he's like, you know what, you're an a**hole. And Romeo is like, well, I want to kill you, but I can't, because I can't tell you why, but trust me, you're like you're like my family now. Because, spoilers, he is.
And you're Mercutio's like a cousin-in-law to me.
You're like a cousin-in-law. And Mercutio is like, this is dishonorable. Hey, Tybalt, I'll fight you. And then Tybalt kills him.
Mm-hmm. Bad
under Romeo's arm.
And then Romeo finds out after Mercutio makes some grave puns. Romeo gets super pissed. Tybalt comes back in and Romeo spikes him. And then Benvolio's like, well, that was ill-conceived and you should probably bounce because the prince is going to execute you. So Romeo bounces and then the prince, after missing Romeo, says that Romeo is exiled on pain of death.
Yep, he should kill him, but he's not going to. He's just going to be banished instead.
Mm-hmm.
So then we smash into Juliet. She's waiting for her wedding night. They've been married, and that's, you know, she's passing time until the night comes. And she's like, come on, time needs to go faster. And then the nurse comes in, who's supposed to be coming in with great news, and is just distraught because she has just seen Tybalt dead. So the nurse tells Juliet, hey, your cousin's dead, and your husband's banished. And Juliet naturally freaks out.
Mm-hmm. Romeo, on the way to his exile, stops by the friar's cell, and he's like, what am I gonna do? Oh my god. And then the nurse shows up, and the nurse tells Romeo that Juliet is still in love, even though this is all, they're super star-crossed right now. Romeo tries to kill himself, and the friar's like, nope, 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 nope. No, we're not gonna do that. Why don't you go into your exile, and then I have this plan about... Just trust me. It's going to turn out great. Nothing could possibly go wrong. So Romeo's like, all right, sounds good. And the nurse is like, great, I'll let Juliet know. And they head off their separate ways.
Right. So then we see the Capulet. We see Lord Capulet, his wife, and Paris. Paris is like, I'm really sad. Sorry about your cousin, but I'm here to get a wife. And they're like, just give us a little time. And then he's like, you know what, Capulet, you know, Paris, you want her? Thursday. Let's get married on Thursday. So now we know that Juliet is betrothed, even though we also know she's already married.
Mm-hmm.
So then we come back to the morning after scene, after the night of the consummation of the marriage. We have Romeo and Juliet. Romeo peacing out and Juliet going like, am I going to see you again? He's like, I have no doubt. This is all going to be, we're going to look back on this and laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers, they are not.
They are not. Paris comes to Friar Lawrence to ask him to officiate the wedding between Paris and Juliet. And Friar Lawrence is like, don't know that I can do that. And then
he gives her the potion.
Oh, right. And then the Friar Lawrence gives Juliet the full plan about the poisoning and the you go to sleep and they'll think you're dead and then you'll wake up and then happily ever after. Can't go wrong. Airtight.
Can't possibly go wrong. So then we have the scene with Juliet and the nurse and the mother the night before she goes, what's supposed to be the night before her quote unquote wedding night. But we know it's the night that she's going to take the poison. So she says goodbye to all of them, then has a premonition about being in the vault and how terrible it's going to be. And then the next scene is they wake up, or she doesn't wake up, but everyone else wakes up and finds her, air quotes, dead.
Mm-hmm.
They all tweak out. They bury her. And then we do a smash cut to Romeo, who is in Mantua?
Yes, he's out in Mantua. He gets the letter. He also doesn't know about this plan. So Romeo now gets a letter that Juliet's dead, which is problematic for him. He then naturally goes to an apothecary and buys poison, promising to kill himself at Juliet's grave because that's what lovers do.
So then he goes into the grave, but who stops him outside but Paris? And he just kills Paris on the way in.
Because
YOLO goes to see Juliet and is like, man, you look so alive. This is devastating.
It's like you're not even dead.
But you're not, so I'm going to take this poison. So he 86s himself. And then the next second, in comes the friar, who had found out from Friar John that he was unable to give Romeo his letters because of the plague, and he got quarantined.
Happens.
That's, you know, that was just very topical at the time. So he freaks out, comes to the grave, and he's like, ah, damn it, I missed it. And then Juliet wakes up and is like, Friar, I'm here, and here you are. Everything is good. And he's like, don't look down, because there's your dead husband. And wouldn't you know, she does look down. And then stabs herself.
Yeah. And then the prince comes in and he's like, nice work, Everybody happy about this? And then
and they're like, you know what? We kind of are. Let's kiss and make up. I'm going to build a monument. He's like, I'm going to build a bigger monument. And that's a happy ending.
So that's
the tragical comedy Romeo and Juliet.
Now that you know basically what you'll be watching, we're going to take a few minutes to talk about where Romeo and Juliet falls in Shakespeare's personal timeline and what was happening in the world when it was written. Daniel.
Yes, so we can pretty conclusively place Romeo and Juliet in the year 1596. This was really fun looking this up because I didn't realize this, but there are two textual references, quotes from the play that help us place this exactly. The first is the nurse's first scene. She talks about the earthquake, "'Tis since the earthquake now 11 years. And there was a pretty famous, well, there were really three famous terrible earthquakes in Shakespeare's world in 1580, 1583, and 1585. And the second textual note is, it says the play opens a fortnight and odd days before Lammastide, which would have been August 1st. And based on some people who have calculated the position of the moon.
Oh, look at the moon.
Look at the moon, which is a big part of this play, the moon and the sun. The only year that that's possible is 1596. So based on those two textual notes, we know this is in 1596. So what was going on in that year, Kev?
Well, tying back to another real life event that was happening before you segue me into something that I'm not prepared to talk about. that 11 years in 1585, 11 years before the like that, you know, 1596, when Juliet and her twin Susan in the text were weaned, or her twin, the nurse's daughter Susan, were weaned, is also the time that Hamnet and Judith, Shakespeare's twin children, were born. They were born in 1585.
Oh, no kidding.
So there is a, you know, Juliet would be a contemporary of Shakespeare's children.
And tragically, Hamnet, Shakespeare, died on August 11th, 1596.
Which ties right back into this as well, because maybe Shakespeare's thinking about dead 13-year-olds as he's writing this.
Can you believe it?
Do you
it's
believe
kind
it?
Of interesting with Shakespeare. I feel like the good things in his life and the bad things are always happening really close to each other.
Kind of sucks, right?
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, right.
Why his plays are so... I mean, paradox is so big for him. And the good and bad living side by side. On October 20th of 96, 1596, that is, John Shakespeare was granted the coat of arms, which was a big deal in the Shakespeare family. Their motto, which I think is interesting, is... I don't have it in Latin, but it's not without right. First of all, it's fascinating.
W-R-I-T-E.
You have a double negative from the greatest writer
That's funny.
Of all time. but there's that sense of, you know, there was that he was now a gentleman and class is so big in England. And it's like, even on their coat of arms, there's the defense of like, no, we belong here.
Right.
Which I think is a support for the whole Shakespeare couldn't possibly be Shakespeare. It's like, yes, he can.
They kind of belong. They're not without right. The last thing that tying into what we were saying in the synopsis about the letter not getting there because everything has been closed down for the plague. In July 1596, the theaters of London were closed down. So the first run of this, of Romeo and Juliet, could very well have been a touring production going to other towns, other playhouses around London, other bars, really, London. So you may be seeing this, you know, they're on the road.
Right.
And they're talking about how life on the road sucks. So
there
you go. There That's is fun. Some history of the play. In this next section of the program, we'll identify what we consider to be the most prominent theme of the play and particular places in the piece where you may see it come up. Dan has chosen his three favorites, and I will pick my choice of those three for the two of us to dig in on. So, Daniel, who are our finalists?
The finalists for Miss Best Theme in Romeo and Juliet are, in no particular order, family, destiny, and time. Family, destiny, and time.
I do think time is interesting, but I think let's go with family on this one.
Yeah, I like family a lot. So when thinking about Romeo and Juliet, where their family, the family ties abound. So what drew you to this answer Monsieur Kev.
Well, you know, it's two households both alike in dignity, right? It starts yes. right off there, and it's so the importance of family, and not in the way that you think of family, like in Long Day's Journey into Night. It's not like a kitchen drama. It's correct. About like the house, you know, the right. line, the political unit of the family, and not like, you know, father-son relationships. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A little bit more about legacy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's really interesting what these people are willing to, you know, you see over and over how important family, that concept of family is, the title, the coat of arms right. is, as opposed to, oh, this is what my daughter wants.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That family is less important, but the title is important.
Yeah. It's also really interesting to note the ways in which the different families in this play function.
Mm-hmm.
It's real easy to cast some judgment on all of the families. But if you look at a little bit more deeply, it's like the Montagues don't really talk to each other.
Right.
The Capulets are all over each other and all up in each other's business.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a tight nuclear family. And the Montagues are like, in the very beginning, Romeo's coming in and Lord Montague is like, oh, crap, here comes my son, Benvolio, go talk to him, and like flees the scene.
Yeah, his dad.
Right. And he's yeah. like, I'm really worried about him. Oh, here he is, I gotta go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Versus the parents and the Capulets, who are completely controlling
mm-hmm.
and in their daughter's business, and like, no, you will marry him, you will do this, or you're exiled,
mm-hmm.
you're out of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's neat to look at, they're not just, I think it can be real easy to look at that first line and go, oh, two households, both alike in dignity. Meaning, like, two families who are very much the same. And it's like,
right.
no.
They both are of the same class, but they are not of the same stuff.
Right. They function fundamentally in a different
mm-hmm.
way.
I also think it's interesting, and it's too often glossed over, yes. that there is a third family here.
Yes.
And that is the prince's family, yes?
Yes, indeed.
Which includes Mercutio.
And Paris.
And Paris. So Paris and Mercutio are of a blood with the prince, which is pretty important, because you keep thinking
yeah.
your instinct is that, you know, especially when you have a costume designer where all the Romeo team, where Team Romeo wears blue and Team Juliet wears red,
yep.
Mercutio regularly gets thrown into that, but he's not. He's of a different house.
Right.
And then when he gets stabbed, that's why the prince is extra pissed.
Right.
Because he's like, that was my cousin.
Right.
Now your families have dragged mine down.
Right. And at the end, he's left with nothing because Paris is dead too.
Yeah.
And he's just there like, are you happy now? All are punished. It's such a great line.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting to note how your family's actions have a bigger effect on those around you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really neat
comparison. And then piggybacking off of that, even though, to double back on what I just said, even though Mercutio is not of a line with Romeo, he's the one that steps up to defend his name,
right.
The bond that they have is not familial, but their bond of friendship, you know, this band of brothers almost.
Correct.
It's interesting that he doesn't have to defend the family name, you know.
Right.
He defends Romeo's family name more than Romeo is willing to by getting involved with Juliet.
Right.
In a weird
way. And it's the death of Mercutio that propels Romeo into action.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's willing to bear all of Tybalt's aggression
mm-hmm.
under the auspices of, well, you're my cousin now, so I can handle it. Like, I'm not going to fight you. But as soon as his not blood brother, but his brother is killed, he's like, all bets are off. I got to kill you now.
Mm-hmm.
So that right. that blurs
the line
of family.
Both ways. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
So that's family in Romeo and Juliet.
In this section of the show, we choose which non-title characters we would most want to play in this piece and explain why in 2 minutes or less. I won the coin flip before the show and have elected to go first, so here I go.
Boo!
So this is a tough play for me because there's really nobody for me here.
Really?
And
there's
never.
I disagree.
Well, that's very sweet of you. I will enact Peter. Peter.
Peter's a great role.
You know, I'm not really drawn to, they're all just so young and so rash.
Yes.
It's not really my bag.
Okay.
So I think I like Paris. If I had to play something in this, I could picture playing Paris in that he's like This sounds good. Where I'm going to get married, this will be a good marriage for both of our houses. This sounds good.
Right.
And the dad's like, yeah, this is the guy. And I'm like, yeah, all right, that sounds good. Hey, Juliet. And she's like, I hate you. I'm like, okay, cool.
Cool. I still love
guess,
you.
I mean, this is going to have to kind of work, but we'll work it out. I mean, you're 13, so this is weird already. So, you know, give it 5 years, and by the time you're 18, this will all be great. This will be great.
Right. It's an investment.
Then at,
I like
and
it.
And then at the end, when he comes to the grave, and he's like, and he fights Romeo despite the fact that that is ill-advised at best at the state that Romeo is in. It sounds like, oh, well, I guess I got to fight you. Oh, oh, that's it.
Oh, and dead.
Oops. Oopsies. I think there's something interesting to be mined there.
Yeah.
But yeah, this play wouldn't be my first choice overall. So I'll take Paris. Daniel.
Nice. I think that's cool because I think so often you see Paris... Like, it's like a tall, lean, like, wears all black and is clearly a bad guy, Paris.
Are you saying I'm not tall?
Or lean.
As far as the people on this that don't know us know, I could be very tall and lean.
All I'm saying, this was an attempt at a compliment, but now, forget that. I was going to say, at least you make Paris likable, but I would have misspoken.
That's a stretch, too.
This
the important
helps
thing
me
is,
understand why Julia is like, nah.
If you haven't met us, I am very tall and lean and also quite handsome. Daniel.
We're into lying now. That's cool.
They don't know.
Ah, they know. Anyway.
It's an audio medium.
Well, if Romeo and Juliet are off the board, as they are in this scenario,
good,
I think the part that
in.
I would most like to play is Lord Capulet.
Okay.
I think Lord Capulet, in any other play, would be the best character in that play.
Oh, interesting.
Except for maybe Hamlet. Well, except for definitely Hamlet. But I think
right.
he is
if he
so,
was transferred into
yes.
Hamlet, you're saying, yeah, got
yeah.
It.
You know, he's so interesting. And mm-hmm. it's just overshadowed by Romeo and Juliet and the nurse and Mercutio. It's just that you don't hear about him and you don't think about him enough. But I think he has the best text in the play.
Mm-hmm.
I think he actually goes on the biggest emotional journey. Because he has to live with himself at the end of the play as opposed mm-hmm. to piecing out mm-hmm. halfway through or at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the most complicated situations. I think frequently you'll notice he's at the heart of the action of the play.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just think he doesn't – there's so much those monologues and the speeches with Juliet and how complicated it is with his wife. And he's just trying to get his daughter married.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to do the right thing, but he's also a control freak. I think it's really – there's so much to dig in on.
Mm-hmm.
It would be – an endlessly rewarding process. He's one of those characters I think you could play 8 times.
Yeah,
and,
probably.
And never play the same guy.
Interesting.
So I am very, very fond of the idea of playing Lord Capulet.
This is the section of the show where we pull our favorite phrase from this play and talk through it so you can nod smugly and knowingly when you hear it in production. The line we chose from Romeo and Juliet is "A pack of blessings light upon thy back," from Act 3, Scene 3. Let's hear the phrase in context. Oh, tell me, friar, tell me, in what vile part of this anatomy doth my name lodge? Tell me that I may sack the hateful mansion.
Hold thy desperate hand. Art thou a man? Thy form cries out, thou art, thy tears are womanish, thy wild acts denote the unreasonable fury of a beast. Thou hast amazed me, by my holy order, I thought thy disposition better tempered. Hast thou slain Tybalt, and wilt thou slay thyself, and slay thy lady that in thy life lies by doing damned hate upon thyself? Take heed. By doing damned hate upon thyself? Why railest thou on thy birth, the heaven and earth, since birth and heaven and earth, all three, do meet in thee at once, which thou at once wouldst lose? What? Rouse thee, man. Thy Juliet is alive, for whose dear sake thou wast but lately dead. There art thou happy. Tybalt would kill thee, but thou slewst Tybalt. There art thou happy too. The law that threatened death becomes thy friend and turns it to exile. There art thou happy. A pack of blessings light upon thy back. Happiness courts thee in her best array, but like a misbehaved and sullen wench, thou pout'st upon thy fortune and thy love. Take heed, for such die miserable.
So there you go.
Fired up.
A pack of blessings light upon thy back. Whew, Dan. Whew. So, do you want to give us a little context on that?
Yes, of course. So this is after Romeo's been banished. He comes to the friar, and the friar, and Romeo's in this situation where he's like, you know what? Everything sucks. I'm just going to kill myself. And the friar's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's look at the situation. You should be dead in three different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You are married. Your wife is alive. She loves you. There was a guy who wanted to kill you, and you killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get a little perspective here. You are blessed, not mm-hmm. cursed. And that's the context of that phrase.
Yeah. I love the repetition here of there art thou happy.
Yes.
Which is, you know, the punctuation is neutral, there art thou happy. But it is great to be like, that's something you've got going for you. And right. that's something you've got going for you. I feel like that's something that you could stick on someone when you're telling them that things are good.
Yeah.
But, you know, summarizing, and those are all tied together as the pack of blessings that light upon your back.
Right. Right. I do think that if this was a normal episode and this was in Everyday Shakes, there art thou happy is a quote that you could be using in everyday conversation pretty, mm-hmm. pretty frequently.
Interesting.
But for the sake of the moment in the show, I think right. yeah, that summation of all of these things are really, when you look at them from the other angle, the other side, really tremendous blessings
yeah.
that we're surrounded by. It's really easy to look at this and go, wow, everything is shit. But that would be not pulling yourself away enough to realize the whole picture.
Right. And it's great because five lines later, Romeo literally has the line, how well my comfort is revived by this.
Right.
And I was like, oh, yeah, this is pretty great.
Right.
This actually worked out pretty good.
I also love the nurse's response, which I don't, it's, oh, what a thing this learning is.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the line.
Oh, what learning is.
Oh, what learning, right. Which is great, because she's just there. It's this great monologue with just Romeo getting dressed down by the friar,
mm-hmm.
and the nurse is just there watching and mm-hmm. just chimes. That line always kills. It relieves the tension. I think it really.
It's almost like
a pretty high tense scene.
Yeah, it's almost like a Good Will Hunting type of thing where Will Hunting goes to Harvard and, you know, and Chucky is like, oh, he's my boy's wicked smart.
It's totally
it's basically
that.
The Shakespeare. it's the Shakespeare equivalent. I
you
think
like apples.
Yeah. The fry is going to make everything better. How do you like them apples? I think this is, you know, like you always talk about, this is the part where you take someone's hand and,
yeah.
you know, on your date. I think this is when you can take their hand if maybe you're having a series of small, maybe it's a longer term significant
yep.
other.
Yep.
And you're struggling through some little problems.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing huge.
You always leave
it's
the
just,
toilet seat up.
Really, yeah.
Really
you snore and you sleep. You are too tall and handsome. I mean, as I know. and then it's, you know, at this moment when he's going through like, this is great and this is great. You can just take their hand and be like, we really do have a lot going for us.
Right. If you have a good wink at your disposal, I could never drop a wink here. It would look like I'm having some sort of seizure in the middle of the show.
Oh, God, is there a doctor?
But a good wink here, too, with a little hand squeeze will really get you going far.
Interesting.
You are my pack of blessings.
Oh, nice.
You know?
Nice. Or if you're there with your kids, they could be your pack of blessings.
Right. Look around. Yeah, they drive us nuts, and they always make a mess at the restaurant. Oh, that's just my own personal thing. Never mind.
You or your kids?
Not my kids, other kids.
Uh-huh. So there you go. A pack of blessings light upon thy back. Here, we will highlight the biggest practical challenge to the director in this play and share a few ideas on how it has been solved in the past. For Romeo and Juliet, it's kind of a straightforward play, but I suppose yeah. the biggest challenge is in the stage direction. Tybalt, under Romeo's arm, thrusts Mercutio in and flies in Act 3, Scene 1. So
yes.
This is Mercutio's death. You know, it's just your standard issue stabbing in a street fight that
yep.
we've all seen a million times before. But I feel yep. like I see this done a different way in each production.
Yeah,
does that
absolutely.
Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought this was more interesting than the balcony scene, too, because then it's like, use a ladder.
Right.
You know?
Right. Make a balcony.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. No. This is always, I think, the one of the biggest questions is how do you want to handle the violence
mm-hmm.
in not just in this moment, but violence in general
mm-hmm.
in Romeo and Juliet, because it's very much a violent world,
mm-hmm.
and how these characters interact with violence is interesting. Mercutio has some text earlier in the play that talks about basically, you know, Tybalt is new school fighting and Mercutio is old school fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge comes for the fight choreographer and the director. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it like a boxer versus an MMA fighter?
Okay.
That sort of thing. Or is it someone who, you know, fences versus someone who has two switchblades?
Right.
Like, they clearly fight in different ways.
Right. They have styles.
Right. So that becomes very fun when you're working on the piece to go, okay, Shakespeare's given us a clue, and we get to decide what that clue means.
Right.
So what are some of the ones you've seen that you've enjoyed?
Well, I think that what I end up usually seeing here, I would say the majority of the thing, what I see most often is almost it turning into like a dance sequence, like closer sure. to dance than fight choreography.
Yep.
Whether that's something literally that's dance, like in West Side Story, or like you have, and whatever, usually you have the vocabulary set up in the scene that opens the play.
Yes.
With Gregory and Samson and those boys.
Yep.
However they scuffle is the vocabulary that you are going to see heightened here in the main event, if that's the undercard.
Correct.
So I feel like, yeah, I feel like it's usually done dance-like, and I kind of don't like, it makes it less brutal.
Okay.
You know, because it's a murder. It's a murder right. in the street in the middle of the day.
Right.
You can also, and I feel like I've never really seen like a violent, like a jarringly sure. violent in the same way that you see, you know, if you're seeing Titus or if right. you're seeing, I'm trying to think of other plays with really brutal fights.
And Titus is a pretty good yeah. example.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like I never see, or like yeah. you do, I think in your production that you directed a couple
yeah,
of years ago, you
I'm
had,
happy to talk about that.
Yeah, you had, do you use slow motion? Is that what you,
yeah, we did, we,
bullet time?
We did bullet time. No, we did dance. We established that dance was the vocabulary for violence in the piece because the people in this world love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
They love, clearly these are people who are attracted to violence in the same way that dance can be really appealing and you lose yourself when you're dancing in that way. Mm-hmm. So with this, what we had done, also we had a challenge of, we were doing it in the park in the middle mm-hmm. of the day where all different kinds of people would be coming through.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did with this fight was there had just been in the news in town a murder that had happened quite by accident. Not accident, but I don't think death was the intention.
Right.
Where someone had been in a bar fight, punched in the back of the head, and died.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to go for something that was very much in the vocabulary of the town and go, is this something that we should be talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does Tybalt mean to kill Mercutio?
Mm-hmm.
Or does he, you know, how does that happen if we're dancing, we're playing, and then all of a sudden, boom, someone's dead? And then the follow-up response to that was, I thought a very graphic, hands-on Romeo choked Tybalt to death.
Right.
With a jump rope, which is, you know, something that children use to play.
Right.
So that juxtaposition of violence and playfulness. And I think that was very, I thought that was personally a great choice.
If you do say so yourself.
If I had to direct the piece again, I would do the exact same thing.
Well, but that's, so anyways, there you go. There's some variety of options that you can see in this. So yeah, write us and let us know how the director of the production you're going to see killed Mercutio. So there you go, folks. Now you are all primed to go see Romeo and Juliet.
Wow.
If you found this helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review to No Holds Barred on iTunes so we can keep bringing Shakespeare to your headphones on a weekly basis. If you have questions or comments you'd like to send our way, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at No Holds Bardcast, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ No Holds Bardcast. Until Woo! Next time, do you have anything else, Danny?
No, I feel good.
Until next time, I'm Kevin Condardo.
And I'm Dan Bullier.
For never was a story of more woe
than this of Juliet and her Romeo.
Adieu, 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 adieu.